Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. My guest today is Carl Leonards, who's the executive director of World Book Night US, coming up April 23rd. We'll also talk with novelist Gerald Duff, whose new book is Dirty Rice, A Season in the Evangeline League. And we'll hear some poetry and music from Somewhere South of Metropolis, featuring the poetry of Don Paul. Carl Leonards has a dream job. He's the executive director of World Book Night in the U.S. World Book Night, which began last year in the United Kingdom, will happen here for the first time, April 23rd, the birthday of Shakespeare and Cervantes. So what happens on World Book Night? Thousands of volunteers, 25,000 volunteers, fan out in cities and towns to give away carefully selected books to light or non-readers. It's a joyful and gigantic enterprise, and Carl Leonards, with years of publishing and marketing at HarperCollins, Random House, and BookSense, to his credit, is the perfect person to lead it. Welcome to The Reading Life, Carl.
Thank you.
This is an incredible undertaking. Tell us how you got involved with it.
I was minding my own business last summer, about to start planning for the fall regional trade shows for HarperCollins, and I got a call from a publisher of Grove Atlantic, Morgan Entrekin, and from Oren Tyker, the head of the American Booksellers, and they asked me to do this, and I said yes.
And that was easy. It was that easy.
I mean, I love where I was. I've been in publishing, as you mentioned, you know, for 30-plus years, but you kind of live for the moment when you can step off the fast track and do something nonprofit, and it took me 5 seconds to say yes.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's such a chance to make a difference, I think.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, reading is obviously so important, but the act of giving is just as important. And it's just neat to see people react in such a positive way.
Now, the list of 30 books, I mean, because volunteers have their choice from among 30 books. And these titles were chosen from any number of great book lists. But you had special concerns about diversity, didn't you?
Yes. Ethnic, geographic, gender, subject category, all those things. It really worked out wonderfully.
So tell us about some of the lists you pulled from and some of the titles you're particularly fond of.
We wanted to have books that people both loved and enjoyed for their literary qualities or just the commercial fun of it. So the decision was made to pull from 5 or 6 different lists: the Independence, Reading Group Choices, Goodreads, which is an online site, the ALA Awards, Barnes & Noble Discover Picks. We had a group called Above the Tree Line give us the top best-selling paperbacks of the last 10 years. So the focus was on best-selling, award-winning, or very popular paperbacks from the last 10 years. We thought that would be the best way to get a list that was accessible, yet have something for everybody.
And this is truly a labor of love. Tell us some of the things that have been donated so far. I mean, the authors are foregoing all their royalties, for one thing, which is huge.
It's all been donation, you know. You referred me as the executive director. I'm also the sole employee. but I do have, you know, thousands of volunteers via the bookstores working on this in the libraries, so it's been a group effort there. A team of 4 people from the different publishing houses got together and got 15 paper and book companies to donate the paper, the covers, the printing time, and all that, which was huge. That's the biggest part of it. Authors donated their royalties, or waived them, more correctly. UPS came in as a shipping partner, thank goodness. Because printing the books is one thing, choosing them first is another, but getting them around a country this size was a huge cost.
And didn't you even have to move the paper around, too?
We did. I actually had to hire a full-time production manager for a month to move the paper between the different mills. So there's no advertising campaign. It's all social media. So the publishing folks and booksellers and librarians and authors all tweeted and Facebooked saying, go sign up, because there's a sign-up process to be a giver. And yeah, it's... It's been a nightmare.
Now, World Book Night has special ties with independent bookstores and libraries. And, you know, you would think if you're trying to reach light or non-readers, those might not be the places you'd go. But talk about that, how important that has been in closing the circle of what you're doing here.
The bookstores and libraries are community-based. They know the town. And in their normal lives, in their business life, they know who the readers are. But, you know, readers know where the non-readers are. If your mom is in a hospital and you're a reader and she's a reader, but you go sit there for a couple hours, you look around, there are 15 people not reading. So from the very beginning, I didn't want it to be a top-down thing from New York, just where publishing is mostly set. But, you know, the independents and libraries are in the community. They know everybody from the mayor to the TV reporter to the radio person to the head of the hospital to the Rotary to family members who know the food pantries, the shelters, the hospitals, everywhere you might want to go, the bar owners, other business owners. So it seemed natural just looking at a map that they were going to be the ways to get the word out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that appeals to me so much about this is that, you know, I can see whole circles of literary community rising where there might not have been them before, or rising in new ways and reinforcing new relationships. And I think that's really important about World Book Night, is that it is a community of readers reaching out to embrace people and bring them in.
I wish I'd known that to say that months ago, the circle of readers. It just feels to me like one-to-one. We haven't used the word literacy.
Right.
Which feels kind of like medicine to me. So I think just people being in a comfortable setting in their town, whether it's a hospital lobby, at a bar, at a diner, in the flower shop, just saying, hey, I'm giving out some books. I thought you might enjoy them. The single act, I think, is more important than, I don't expect reading to jump 10% next year because of World Book Night.
Right.
I actually think it's just a personal act of giving. It's just the aspect of doing a good deed, and a book is just one of those ways.
Well, there's nothing more fun than saying, I love this book. You will love this book, too.
Yeah.
And we'll all get to do that together,
fun,
sort of.
And that's why we consciously decided to go with current living authors and not Dickens, Austen, Hemingway, Steinbeck. They're all wonderful, but those you associate with school.
Right.
And this, you know, we wanted Ender's Game, a science fiction fantasy novel, Stephen King's The Stand. But then, of course, there's, you know, Maya Angelou, so I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. We wanted nonfiction, so there's something for everybody.
And for New Orleans readers, there's Zaytoun by Dave Eggers.
Absolutely.
So what will be the measure of your success?
One, a fun, safe night. Two, all the givers enjoy the experience. Three, the people who receive the books embrace it and read them and pass them along. And then four, ultimately, that all that activity comes together for like a two-week window, both the week before and the week after, of people talking about books and World Book Night and just raising the level of conversation a bit. It's just a good campaign about the joys of reading.
Absolutely. Could you tell us some of your favorite stories about some of the givers so far?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a large number of people doing wonderful things. I don't want to not point out how wonderful it's to go to the hospital and nursing homes and shelters and pantries and school, a lot of school giveaways. But it is fun to make note just some of the cleverness of some people. A surfer in Santa Cruz is going to put 20 copies of Prayer Owen Meany in 20 Ziplocs and paddle out and give it to his surf buddies. A woman, and she has a reading assistance dog, and they're going to school with 20 copies of Because of Winn-Dixie. A cabbie in Duluth is taking books around as he drives on the entire day. Got bowling alleys, tattoo parlors, one rodeo. The family that's featured in The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, the family's going out in Baltimore and giving out books, which is just a very sweet thing.
Oh, that's fantastic. And people could check out the map at worldbooknight.org to see where the givers are located around the country, too.
And actually, it's at our Facebook site. We didn't post it on the way. At Facebook.
Okay.
WBN America. There's a map with a dot for any town with a giver, so it could be one person or 50. And we're actually posting regional maps, and New Orleans went up today.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we're all looking forward to it here. We really are. We've been talking with the irrepressible Carl Leonards, the executive director of World Book Night in the U.S. Carl, thank you so much. Thanks for being here, and thanks for making this wonderful event happen.
Thank you so much yourself, and I just love New Orleans. I'm jealous that I'm not there right now.
Watch for World Book Night givers around town on April 23rd. They'll be out in force. Don Paul moved to New Orleans from the San Francisco Bay Area in January 2006. He's worked with Common Ground Relief and other relief agencies in the city's recovery. In 2011, he began to work with musicians again, and he'll be playing with his group somewhere south of Metropolis Wednesday, April 18th at 7 p.m. at Café Istanbul in the New Orleans Healing Center. The group is Don Paul, Poetry and Music, Evan Christopher, Clarinet and Soprano Saxophone, Alfred Uganda Roberts, Percussion, and Seizu Shibayama, Electric Guitar, and Tom Worrell on keyboards. Here's a sample of their work, Years Ago Today.
I saw tonight in New Orleans at Ingrid Lucia's backyard twilight jazz fest party. Two, like that couple in Ipanema. Was it all of 23 years ago? Dancing within their space of lawn. They old as the 1930s and red suspenders. Sliding, smiling, twirling. Their minds alert to rhythms, their limbs strove to catch. They, like cherries upon froth, and light from distant shores. Each also wearing that pineapple and strawberry, banana and peacock's eye, Carmen Miranda headdress, I'd seen on the couple of kindred grace and cheer in Comaniso. All those years ago.
Gerald Duff is the author of 13 books, including a story collection, Fire Ants, a memoir, Home Truths, about growing up in East Texas in the 50s, and his most recent book, his eighth novel, Dirty Rice, A Season in the Evangeline League. As you can imagine, it's Louisiana through and through. Hi, Gerald.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great, it's a pleasure to meet you. Now, you were born in Beaumont, and you grew up on the Gulf Coast, and that means always in sight and smell of the petrochemical industry, right?
That's exactly right. When I go home, I smell it air and say, home. All the chemicals in the air.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about your Louisiana connections.
Well, the way that I got onto this particular topic for a novel was the fact that I knew my uncle had played baseball in the minor leagues back in the 30s, and I didn't know where. And my sister was doing some investigating and said, I discovered he played baseball at the Rain Rice Birds in the Evangeline League in Louisiana. And so I looked into it, began doing research, and discovered he had a great kind of pitching career for the Rain Rice Birds. And I got interested in, I've always been interested in baseball. And I began to work my way into the league and became fascinated with it. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a great topic, I think, to tackle, and I did that.
And baseball fans will love it, and they'll know this was a real league.
It really was. The Hot Sauce League, they called it.
Right. I know. I love that so much.
Isn't it great?
So tell us about your protagonist. He's really interesting.
Well, I grew up in East Texas and on the Gulf Coast, and I was living in East Texas about 80 miles north of Beaumont. I was living near the Indian reservation called the Alabama Coushatta Reservation. I knew some of the young men there, and when I went off to graduate school many years later, it struck me, my first novel, that it'd be interesting to try to think about transplanting one of the Native Americans from the Alabama Coushatta Reservation to a different context. And I did that in a novel. And then I was getting into the Evangeline League many years later after that, and began to realize that what would be wonderful to do would be to see how different it would be for one of the Native American baseball players from East Texas to come to Louisiana and play baseball. What would he face? What kind of problems? How would he be viewed? How would he handle the situation he'd find himself in? And that gave me the kind of conflicts I thought would be helpful in writing this work of fiction.
Now, this character is particularly devoted to baseball.
Yes, he is.
So tell us about the interesting things he's done to prepare for this life.
He makes his own bets at one point, and he thinks that there are a certain number of hits in his bat. He's very superstitious in lots of ways. And so he'll use his bats until he thinks the hits are gone or nearly gone, and he'll stop doing that. And he loved the idea of being on the diamond, because on the diamond, as he saw it, time means nothing. No matter how far behind you are, if you're still at bat, you might catch up. And there's no such thing as time running out for you. It has to do with how you play, as to whether or not you're able to keep living. And so he had this kind of mystical notion about what baseball is, and that's the way he views what happens when he steps onto the field. He enters a magic space in lots of ways.
What was the personal pleasure of taking on baseball with this character?
Well, it had to do with my uncle in lots of ways. He's been gone for a long time now. However, he was a great athlete in high school, and he said he played professional baseball. Well, I didn't know where until I began to study. And that was interesting to me, to be able to think of it in terms of family. But also I was thinking about it in terms of just the camaraderie and that develops in a team, and particularly in baseball teams. There's such a binding that takes place. And that, I think, focused for me a kind of a structure that I could use. I think also that baseball has been, it's parallel the history of this country in lots of ways. You think about when Jackie Robinson became a player, the first black player in the big leagues. That was a great step forward for race relations in this country. So there's a kind of mythic structure that baseball has, and I really enjoyed working with that idea and trying to bring it to life in my novel itself.
And tell us about the title. Dirty Rice is not something that pops up so often. Gumbo pops up every 10 seconds.
It certainly does. It's interesting. There are lots of parallels, because the Rain, Louisiana team was called the Rice Birds, the Rain Rice Birds. And that struck me as being interesting. And then, of course, the idea of dirty rice. It looks strange, and it's composed of parts which are not usually the prime parts of anything, but all put together with the right kind of spices, it's a wonderful dish. I thought this would be a great title for the book, because what the book is about the kind of pure definition and idea about baseball that my hero, Kimber Batiste, has, and about how that conflicts with some of the corruption and underhandedness that takes place in the baseball league, in the Evangeline League, and in his own team. Because the Evangeline League was famous for being a league that was influenced by gambling. Many of the teams were owned by slot machine syndicates. Some games were thrown, supposedly. There was a big trial in 1946 about a playoff game that seemed to be obviously a thrown game, and players admitted to being bought by gamblers to play badly, to lose the game. So all that seemed to be a nice kind of contrast to the kind of idea of purity that my protagonist has in the book. And so I thought the word dirty rice captured that well, because rice is wonderful in itself, but to call it dirty is contradictory. Dirty rice. It's like speaking about, you know, bad meat, bad food. And food is good, meat is good, rice is good, but when you call it dirty, you're mixing up something which is corrupt in the thing itself.
Well, there's a lot of good mixing of all sorts of things in this novel. And as we turn our thoughts toward baseball season, I can't think of a better book to read. We've been talking with Gerald Duff, whose new book is Dirty Rice, A Season in the Evangeline League. You can meet Gerald and hear him read from Dirty Rice Thursday, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Delia Tomino Nakayama teaches American Haiku workshops every Monday in April from 2 to 4 p.m. at Sekisui Restaurant, 239 Decatur Street. For registration and tuition, call 504-289-9142. The group Somewhere South of Metropolis, featuring the poetry of Don Paul and original music, makes its debut in New Orleans Wednesday, April 18th at 7 p.m. at Café Istanbul in the New Orleans Healing Center. Sarah Humphreys signs her novel, Untouched, Thursday, April 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Hotel Monteleone. Today's guest, Gerald Duff, signs his baseball novel, Dirty Rice, A Season in the Evangeline League, Thursday, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Poets Christopher Shipman, Vincent Salucci, and Allison Cobb read their work Thursday, April 19th at 8 p.m. at the Goldmine Saloon, part of the 17 Poets Literary and Performance Series. The New Orleans Museum of Art celebrates Poetry Month Friday night at 6 p.m. with a discussion between two poets whose work has been influenced by art, Megan Burns and Gina Ferrara, and one artist whose art has been influenced by poetry, Tricia Vetrano. I'll moderate this event, which begins at 5:30 p.m. with a meet and greet in NOMA's Great Hall, then moves to the auditorium for the discussion at 6. Novelist Rebecca Becknell discusses point of view, understanding it, using it, at the meeting of the Southern Louisiana chapter of the Romance Writers of America, Saturday, April 20th at 10 a.m. at the East Bank Jefferson Parish Library, 4747 West Napoleon Avenue in Metairie. The Octavia Book Science Fiction Book Club discusses Crescent by Diana Abu-Jaber, Saturday, April 21st at 10:30 a.m. at Octavia Books. Susan Morse signs her memoir, The Habit, Saturday, April 21st from 1 to 3 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. Antonia Juhas discusses her book, Hurt Not the Earth, Saturday, April 21st from 3 to 5 p.m. at an Earth Day gathering at Maple Street Bookshop at the New Orleans Healing Center. She is also the author of The Tyranny of Oil and Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. There will be a group reading by the New Orleans Haiku Society, followed by an open mic, Sunday, April 22nd, that's Earth Day, at 3 p.m. at the Maple Leaf Bar. The Pirate Sally Faulkner Society presents a reading, My New Orleans, Tuesday, April 24th at 5:30 p.m. at the Cabildo. You can RSVP to Faulkhouse, that's F-A-U-L-K-H-O-U-S-E, at AOL.com. Writers participating include Lawrence Powell, author of The Accidental City, Constance Adler, author of My Bayou, Moira Crone, author of The Not Yet, Carol Gelderman, author of A Free Man of Color and His Hotel, Robert Janfro, author of The Story Behind the Stone, John Gegenheimer, author of The Second Hill, and Peggy Scott Laborde, author of The Lost Restaurants of New Orleans. The artist Gerson signs his beautiful sketchbook, New Orleans Sojourn, Tuesday, April 24th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. And World Book Night takes place Monday, April 23rd, at various spots throughout the city. Just watch for people giving away books. Some of the local bookstores hosting kickoff parties for World Book Night include Maple Street Bookshop Uptown in Bayou St. John and at the Healing Center. Their parties will be Wednesday, April 18th at 6. And Octavia Books host a kickoff gathering Saturday, April 21st at 2 p.m. for their givers. Major support for The Reading Life is provided by Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org or email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.